Long COVID invasive exercise study suggests purine inhibitors may help. By Court Johnson, March 20th, 2025. There are a couple of reasons to celebrate seeing Inderjit Singh pump out long COVID studies. He's a well-published Yale pulmonologist with an invasive exercise machine to play with. A leader in the invasive exercise field, Singh recently published an article called "The Casting of Invasive Cardiopulmonary Exercise Testing Towards a Common Goal," which, among other things, calls for increased use of ICPET to understand exercise intolerance. Invasive exercise studies are so revealing because their ability to assess both arterial oxygen-rich blood coming from the heart and venous depleted blood after it has passed through the muscle means they can tell what happened to the blood as it goes through the muscles during exercise. They can tell us if the muscles are picking up sufficient amounts of oxygen, or if blood is being lost during transit, or is being pumped out of the heart in sufficient amounts. Problems with all of these processes have been found in ME/CFS and long COVID. In 2022, Singh teamed up with David Systrom, Aaron Waxman, and others to show that the reduction in energy production found during exercise in long COVID was not due to heart issues, but to peripheral issues, such as blood flows and possible mitochondrial disruption, and featured a hyperventilatory breathing pattern. The gist is that people with ME/CFS and long COVID may be hyperventilating, i.e., breathing more rapidly and deeper during exercise than normal in an attempt to get more oxygen into their muscles, and/or they might have autonomic nervous system problems. In 2023, in the study entitled "Post-Acute Sequelae of SARS-CoV-2, More Than Deconditioning," Singh and another Yale researcher put the brakes on the idea that long COVID was nothing more than deconditioning. Again, in 2023, Singh co-authored a paper comparing the exercise physiology of ME/CFS with long COVID, and you can see a link to that paper at this point in the text version of the article. Then, in November 2024, Singh's invasive exercise study, called "The Metabolic and Physiologic Impairments Underlying Long COVID-Associated Exercise Intolerance," employed metabolomics for the first time. Now Singh focuses on metabolism, a critical component of energy production. A lot of focus is on the mitochondria, but without metabolism, the mitochondria don't have the resources they need to produce ATP. Metabolic slant. Before we get to the mitochondria, a long chain of metabolic events has to happen for the mitochondria to function properly. First, carbohydrates, fats, and proteins are metabolized or broken down into glucose, fatty acids, and amino acids, which are then broken down to produce ATP. We often think of the mitochondria as the electron transport chain where ATP is produced, but it's the Krebs or citric acid cycle that provides the electron donors the electron transport chain needs to produce ATP. Glucose, fatty acids, and amino acids feed the Krebs cycle, which takes place both in the cell's cytosol and the mitochondria. This problem with energy production in ME/CFS and long COVID could be due to metabolic problems that prevent the proper feeding of the Krebs cycle. A wonky Krebs cycle would not provide enough electron donors, such as FADH2 and NADH, to the electron transport chain to produce the ATP needed for people with ME/CFS or long COVID to successfully exercise. Study results. Cardiovascular findings. Oxygen-poor muscles. Once again, we see a reduction in peak VO2, peak energy production, caused by reduced peak EO2, or peak oxygen consumption, i.e., the mitochondria in the muscles were simply not using up enough oxygen. This is the oxygen extraction problem that Systrom's invasive exercise studies have found. Oxygen-rich venous blood. The reduced oxygen extraction in the muscles showed up as unusually high levels of oxygen in the venous blood. While this study did not have a healthy control group, the levels of oxygen found in the venous blood of the long COVID patients was almost 10 times higher than that of normally found in healthy people. When their peak VO2 plateaued, the muscles of the long COVID patients ran out of oxygen and started relying more on the less effective anaerobic energy production system to provide energy. The authors calculated that this turn to anaerobic energy production probably occurred at an exercise level comparable to having to walk upstairs. The pattern suggested that mitochondrial problems were to blame. Metabolic breakdown, muscle breakdown. The authors simply stated that a net extraction of 9 amino acids was found and left it at that. A net extraction refers to more amino acids being taken from the bloodstream than released into it. Because amino acids are first taken from the muscles during exercise, the net extraction suggested that the muscles of the long COVID patients had turned to the bloodstream in an attempt to renew themselves. If I'm reading it right, though, this finding appears to jive with another key finding in ME/CFS, that amino acids are being preferentially used in these diseases to feed the Krebs cycle. Anaerobic metabolism emphasized. A global metabolic analysis indicating a large increase in the consumption of purine inosine suggested, once again, that long COVID patients relied more on anaerobic metabolism. Inosine is produced when ATP is rapidly broken down. The high consumption of inosine suggested that long COVID patients' energy production systems maxed out early in the exercise session. Inosine is catabolized ultimately into purines such as hypoxanthine and uric acid, suggesting that high hypoxanthine levels, which have been associated with mitochondrial problems and reduced ATP levels, might be present. Double energy hit. A major takeaway from the study was its finding that both the aerobic and anaerobic energy production pathways in long COVID had been blunted. The authors proposed that the findings have important implications towards the development of potential pharmacotherapeutic interventions directed towards mitigating early reliance of anaerobic metabolism, which may include shifting, restoring, and/or enhancing mitochondrial oxidative phosphorylation capacity during exercise. Succinate sticks out. A dramatic correlation between succinate in the venous blood and peak energy production was found. The author suggested this could reflect post-exercise glucose tolerance problems. A familiar scenario may be playing out as well. While succinate can enhance ATP production in the electron transport chain, it also plays a role in the Krebs cycle. In hypoxic or low oxygen conditions, the conditions this study suggests exist in the muscles during exercise, a slowdown of the Krebs cycle could cause succinate to accumulate in the mitochondria and subsequently get released into the bloodstream. Itaconate-shunt connection? The authors didn't mention it, but the itaconate shunt inhibits succinate dehydrogenase, which breaks down succinate, resulting in increased succinate levels. The two succinate elevations occur in different contexts. One results from metabolic activity during exercise, while the other results from inflammation. Could inflammation produced by exercise be propping up succinate levels in ME/CFS patients and contributing to an itaconate shunt? I have no idea. Purine findings suggest treatment options. In the end, the authors proposed that purine metabolism may serve as a potential novel treatment target, but didn't mention specific treatments. The situation is complex given purine's role in many processes and the variety of purine inhibitors found. However, purine inhibitors might be able to help situations where exercise intolerance is present and in conditions in which high levels of ATP are broken down. High ATP breakdown occurs when high levels of metabolic stress are present, causing the cell to break down more ATP than it synthesizes and can cause numerous problems. Under these conditions, the muscle's ability to relax and produce force is impaired. Bob Navio, some time ago, stated that the low energy state found in ME/CFS results in contracted, tense muscles. Increased lactate and hydrogen ion production can cause intracellular acidosis. A predilection for protein misfolding can result in protein aggregations that gum up the works. All in all, high levels of ATP breakdown, which appear to be happening in these long COVID patients, result in muscle fatigue, cellular stress, and metabolic imbalances. We also might want to inhibit high levels of purine production because it can produce metabolites such as inosine and hypoxanthine, which can be broken down into uric acid. Uric acid, which some ME/CFS long COVID doctors test for, enhances oxidative stress, the last thing anything with these diseases wants more of, and it enhances muscle fatigue. Purine inhibitors. I asked ChatGPT AI and Perplexity AI about purine inhibitors and individuals with exercise intolerance or post-exertional malaise. ChatGPT AI suggested that the same kinds of purine inhibitors might be helpful for either condition. Even though ME/CFS, fibromyalgia, and post-infectious diseases were the most commonly recommended diseases, I had not heard of most of these used to treat these disorders. All of the drugs came with some cautions, but most seemed manageable. Xanthine oxidase inhibitors, or XOIs. These would work best in individuals with mitochondrial dysfunction or metabolic fatigue by reducing oxidative stress and improving energy efficiency. The drug, allopurinol. How it helps. Allopurinol lowers uric acid and oxidative stress, improves nitric oxide bioavailability for better muscle oxygenation and endurance. Who might benefit? Individuals with mitochondrial dysfunction, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, or exercise-induced oxidative stress. The drug, febuxostat. Febuxostat selectively blocks xanthine oxidase, reducing oxidative stress and ATP depletion without affecting other metabolic pathways. Purine synthesis inhibitors. These are best for people who need to manage chronic inflammation and immune overactivation, which can impair recovery and energy metabolism. The drug, methotrexate. How it helps. Reduces chronic inflammation and autoimmune responses that contribute to exercise intolerance. Who might benefit? Individuals with autoimmune disorders, RA, lupus, inflammatory myopathies, that impair exercise capacity. The drug, azathioprine. Azathioprine suppresses excessive immune activation, preventing muscle and joint inflammation that limits exercise. People who may benefit. People with chronic fatigue, muscle inflammation, or post-viral syndromes. Number 3. Adenosine deaminase inhibitors, or ADAs. Best for boosting adenosine levels to enhance blood flow, ATP conservation, and reduce metabolic stress. The drug. Pentostatin. How it helps. Pentostatin increases adenosine levels, leading to better vasodilation, oxygen delivery, and mitochondrial function. Who might benefit? Individuals with poor circulation, endothelial dysfunction, metabolic fatigue, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, or long COVID. 4. Purine analog nucleosides, best for supporting mitochondrial function, ATP balance, and muscle recovery. Drug. Ribavirin, purine analog. How it helps? It helps maintain nucleotide balance, preventing excessive ATP depletion. Who might benefit? Individuals with chronic fatigue, mitochondrial disorders, or viral-induced exercise intolerance. The drug, clabridine. How it helps? It influences nucleotide turnover, possibly reducing exercise-related muscle degeneration. Who it might help? Endurance athletes or individuals with persistent muscle damage. Suramin? What about Suramin, the drug that Bob Navio has specifically targeted for ME/CFS and other post-infectious diseases? Suramin is a different kind of purine inhibitor, Instead of blocking purine metabolism, Suramin blocks purine receptors, P2X and P2Y, from signaling when signs of metabolic breakdown, such as ATP and ADP, are present. Bob Navio, if I remember correctly, believes that signals of metabolic stress, such as ATP and ADP, are causing the cells of ME/CFS patients to hunker down and exist in a low-energy state. Suramin can also reduce the high levels of ATP breakdown found in ME/CFS, fibromyalgia, and long COVID-19. Overall, Suramin may be able to reduce high levels of ATP breakdown, improve energy efficiency, reduce inflammation, and protect neurons. Please support Health Rising and keep the information flowing. You can find two links between the end of this article and the beginning of the comments section, one where you can give a one-time donation, and another where you can subscribe and give monthly. I hope you've been able to understand everything I've said in this article. I recently had a cold, thus the congested post-viral voice. But thank you for listening.